Tommy, you won't believe the most wicked awesome thing happened. Tommy, Jesus was here. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Faith to Go podcast, your one-stop shop for everything you need to have faith discussions throughout your week with your friends and with your family. My name is David Tremaine, and I'm a congregational consultant with Troubling the Waters.
And I'm Charlotte Pressler, and I'm the Director of Formation with the Episcopal Diocese of San Diego.
And welcome back, everybody. We made it. We made it to Easter.
We did.
Wow. Congratulations, everyone. This is coming out the Monday after Easter Day, so Easter week, if you will. This coming Sunday is sometimes referred to as Low Sunday, which is that because of attendance only?
I think so.
That's
as
so
a matter of fact.
Weird that we have a church-wide understanding of this is called Low Sunday because the numbers are low.
Yes.
Very weird. Anyway, you can still go to church if you want.
We invite you to do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is a great week to go to church.
Agreed.
You know, we will be talking about the gospel reading for this upcoming Sunday. That'll be April 7th, also known as Easter 2, or the second Sunday after Easter. And the Easter season, again, being 50 days long until we get to Pentecost, 50 days.
There's the whole podcast.
Can you believe it? That was the point, the context, and the wrap-up.
Mm-hmm. Educational.
But before we get to our gospel discussion to talk about Tommy, we need to talk to Greg.
Yes, we do.
Because Greg, our producer extraordinaire, the digital evangelist for the Diocese of San Diego, Greg Tuttle, is going to hop on a mic here to share God sighting.
One of the many hats that I wear in ministry is with Agape San Diego, who is our Episcopal Lutheran campus ministry at San Diego State. And I'm grateful to have that experience, and especially to have come back from a place that is near and dear to all three of our hearts, Camp Stevens. Mm-hmm. Listeners of the podcast and the Faith to Go family will know that we are evangelical when it comes to the joys and beauty of Camp Stevens. And having been there as many times as we have, it's hard to remember what it was like to see that first time of beauty and extraordinary peace that one feels when you walk out of the dining hall into that heart of camp, that beautiful space. And I had that opportunity with two tables filled with college students this last week, many of whom, they're searching for something, whether or not they've been burned by the church, whether or not they've been burned by organized religion, whether or not they just want to be in a place where they are known and loved for being who they are as beautiful creations. And to be in that space and to see them bound with joy. And the responsibility I think that I have and come to realize over the course of the past couple of days, the responsibility that I have for introducing people to places of beauty and the responsibility that we have to create environments where we can introduce that beauty and then get out of the way to let God move through that. There's a book by Leo Tolstoy. At the end of his life, he did this wonderful thing of compiling different faith traditions into a day-to-day readings. And they're little snacks to start my day, and it's called A Calendar of Wisdom. And it was recently translated into English from its original Russian. Mm-hmm. And the one from yesterday was a wonderful description of what this whole weekend was like. It's attributed as Arabic wisdom. Moses said to God, "Where can I find you?" And God said, "If you're looking for me, you have already found me." And this was a weekend with students who are looking. They don't know maybe necessarily what they are looking for, but they know that they're looking for something beyond themselves. And to see that connection and to have read that the day before was a beautiful thing to recognize that if you're looking, you have already found.
So nice. It goes well with the gospel, I'd say.
Yeah.
For Thomas.
Timely.
Timely, Tommy. That's what I call him. Not doubting Thomas.
Timely.
Timely, Thomas. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Greg. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you, David.
Greg removes hat and glasses, metaphorical and real. Charlotte?
Yes?
We also always want to hear from everyone out there listening. Mm-hmm. Don't you agree?
I do. We want to hear if they have God sightings, if they'd like to share their ministry context, and there's lots of ways that they can get in contact with us, too.
So many. They can email us, faithgo@edsd.org. They can
engage with us on Instagram, either commenting on something that's posted there or sending us a direct message.
At faith2go. And both of those ways of getting in contact with us are listed in the description for this episode. Just scroll down, you'll find them. Now we're going to move over to our gospel discussion for this upcoming Sunday. Again, that's April 7th, Easter 2, year B, second Sunday after Easter, Low Sunday, if you will. The gospel reading is from John chapter 20, verses 19 to 31. Charlotte's going to read them, and then we'll each have a point.
When it was evening on that day, the first day of the week, and the doors of the house where the disciples had met were locked for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." After he said this, he showed them his hands and his side. Then the disciples rejoiced when they saw the Lord. Jesus said to them again, "Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, so I send you." When he had said this, he breathed on them and said to them, "Receive the Holy Spirit. If you forgive the sins of any, they are forgiven. If you retain the sins of any, they are retained." But Thomas, who was called the twin, one of the 12, was not with them when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the mark of the nails in his hands and put my finger in the mark of the nails and my hand in his side, I will not believe." A week later, his disciples were again in the house, and Thomas was with them. Although the doors were shut, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here and see my hands. Reach out your hand and put it in my side. Do not doubt, but believe." Thomas answered him, "My Lord and my God." Jesus said to him, "Have you believed because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have come to believe." Now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written so that you may come to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that through believing you may have life in his name.
Now that last part says, so that you may come to believe or continue to believe.
So that you may come to believe.
Oh, interesting. This NRSV updated edition has continue to believe.
That's fascinating.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Those are two different things.
They are.
Come to believe and continue to believe. I don't know. We'll have to look into that later. I didn't realize
well,
that
there's
until
a,
right now.
There's a note.
What is it?
B. Mm-hmm. Let's see. You may come to believe, you as plural. The alternative manuscript tradition, C note B, suggests that the purpose of the gospel is to strengthen the faith of existing believers.
Continue to believe.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Also.
Yeah.
I was thinking about when you said that the second Sunday of Easter was Low Sunday. Mm-hmm. We get this story mm-hmm. every year
yeah.
on the second Sunday of Easter.
Yeah.
And so I think we should call it Thomas Sunday.
Yeah.
And encourage people to go, because if you don't go on this Sunday, then you don't ever get this story.
Right.
Because this is when it is always told.
It's Omi Day. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's why it's every single Low Sunday, because eventually everyone's going to hear it.
At least once.
You know, yeah, at least once.
I don't know.
Because everybody's going to skip Sunday after Easter every once in a while. Just for some context, this is the story right after Jesus' appearance to Mary Magdalene outside the tomb in John's Gospel. And so Mary Magdalene goes back to the other disciples. "I have seen the Lord." She tells them these things. And then the very next thing is when it was evening on that day. So the first verse of your of this reading this week. Again, just another little context thing that we like to say when this comes up is that they're talking about being in fear of the Jews, quote unquote. We can really think about that more as like fear of the religious leaders of the time, maybe. Really, they were in fear of a lot of people, and it wasn't just the Jewish people, and it definitely wasn't all the Jewish people, which would have also been them, because they are still Jewish here. This is why it's like important to remember how late John's gospel is written. The last gospel written, most likely, all the way at the end of the first century. So we're talking about like 60, 70 years after these events happened. So things have really changed in terms of the dynamics between followers of Jesus and people that considered themselves like at the core of Judaism. And so you can see that maybe this group of people that John was writing this gospel for thought of themselves as a different community from the Jewish community, but Jesus definitely wouldn't have thought of himself as a different thing from Judaism. He would have thought of himself as Jewish, and he would have thought of the disciples as Jewish too, and they would have thought of themselves as Jewish. So for Jesus to read this and say that there was a difference between him and the disciples and the Jews would have made no sense to Jesus. So just to say that. When we say that, we're really talking about like the Jewish leaders that were persecuting Jesus, but not all the Jewish people. That's really it. There's one other chapter after this, which has a bunch of cool resurrection stories still. So it's interesting that this chapter ends. Jesus did a bunch of other signs with them.
We're not going to tell you
about it. We're not going to tell you, but then we've got three other stories to tell you.
Never
mind. It's like a post-credit scene, like from the Avengers or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, we're pre-credits right now. Who knows what those other things would have been that John could have written about. But we don't know. But Charlotte knows what her point's going to be.
I do.
So and take it away.
Thank you. And I think that that's actually a great introduction to my point, because it does come, and this is something we talked about with Bishop Susan last week also. I feel wonder about the way that Thomas is portrayed in this. Like we said that maybe this could be Thomas Sunday, but Thomas most often is called Doubting Thomas. Mm-hmm. I would say that a good number of Christians know that about him, regardless of anything else, that Thomas is Doubting Thomas, right? Like in here it says who was called the twin.
Yeah.
It doesn't say who was called Doubting Thomas, right?
Yeah.
And so I was thinking about that because the judgment on Thomas comes from reflecting on Thomas's behavior mm-hmm. without knowing Thomas's motivation. And maybe it's because we both do Enneagram work, but I was thinking about it through that lens. Because oftentimes when you do the Enneagram, when you take a test to find out which of the nine types you are, mm-hmm. you are reminded not to answer the questions of it based on your behaviors, but based on your core motivations. Mm-hmm. And that helps you to identify how you operate in this world, the way that you engage with other people, and also enables you, if you know other people's types, to know how to be in relationship with them better, right? Like it's a fantastic growth tool.
Yeah.
And yet what we have here in this story of Thomas is a reflection on his behaviors. And his behavior is a result of missing an experience. He wasn't there. Mm-hmm. He was somewhere else. The same way the disciples were not there when Jesus showed up for Mary. There is alignment in their experience in Jesus being revealed to them in these ways. And so I'm wondering about the possibility, again, we don't get to know Thomas's motivations, but I'd like to have an expansive viewing of the way that Thomas responds to this. And I wonder if it was more from longing, for thirst, of wanting the same experience that everybody else had. Can you imagine showing up and whatever it was that Thomas was out doing, maybe he was out doing the things that Jesus wanted all of them mm-hmm. to doing, right? Like, so he was out serving people and working with people and building relationships and all of these things. And then he comes back and everybody's like, hey, you miss Jesus.
Yeah.
He was here. We saw the marks. We saw the wounds. We saw the resurrected Christ, and you missed it. Mm-hmm. That had to have been painful. There had to have been grief associated with that. I wonder if he felt unworthy, that he had missed out on that opportunity, and that what he names in this is his longing for that shared experience, an experience of the risen Christ. Mm-hmm. Until I see the wounds in his hands where the nails were, until I put my hand in his side, then I'll know. Mm-hmm. And maybe for sure that can be read as doubt. It has been over the years, over the centuries. But it also can be read as longing for relationship, mm-hmm. that I want the intimacy of that experience. I want to come in closer relationship with Christ. Because in that moment, when I have seen the wounds in his side, when I have placed my hands there, then that means that I am in this very real, vulnerable proximity with Jesus, the person whom I love and who has died this tragic death. Mm-hmm. And in the full wholeness of him and seeing him, not as like a magnificent ray of light and in glistening white robes, but as the person that I have been in, journeyed with all of this time and I've been in relationship with, who still bears the scars mm-hmm. of his experience. And I still bear the scars of that experience. And I want to share them with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like the extreme requirements he has for believing himself. Because I think it's meant to be kind of crazy.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, no, until I stick my hand like into
gross.
His body.
So gross.
I'm not going to believe.
Yeah.
Which is him saying, I will never believe you.
Uh-huh.
Which is, to me, is like you're saying, like more a reflection of the depth of his grief than his inability to believe. He's like so sad. And so it is, he's like lashing out, being like, yeah, okay. Unless I can stick my hand in his body. I'm not going to believe you. I think it's a very compassionate way to read it. to not be like, oh, look at this guy who's like the guy you can't believe. Like, he's the one that does believe. He's the only one that's not up there locked in the room.
Right.
Out of being afraid. Mm-hmm. Like, he's the most courageous among them. You know, like, we don't know what he's doing.
No.
But he's definitely not cowering, you know. Jesus kind of, like, is a little shaming him in this situation at the end.
You know? Or calling him out. Like, I wonder if some of that is a naming of, here's the proximity you are looking for, but you could have had this without all of the drama. Like,
right? He's such a drama. He's so dramatic. Thomas, the drama, the dramatic one. Maybe, yeah. And I think it's also probably the gospel writer is maybe like using Thomas to, you know, support the community of people that will never see Jesus. He's asking them to believe still, you know, like, so Thomas kind of becomes a punching bag for John.
Yes. I know.
The thing that I noticed when I read this was I was struck by, it's funny because next week's podcast is going to be about this same story, but from Luke. And in Luke's version, Jesus says, peace be with you one time. I was really struck by the repetition of the phrase by Jesus. You know, it seems like it's in there for a reason. You know, like the gospel writer isn't repeating things just for fun. It's like, why does Jesus say, peace be with you two times? And so it makes sense to me that, like, Jesus shows up and stands among them, and they're afraid, right? He says, peace be with you, to, like, comfort them in their fear. The thing that made me wonder, the thing that I really noticed was then it says that they, he showed him his hands and the disciples rejoiced. And then Jesus said again, peace be with you. So it's like the first time they're so scared and sad and Jesus wants peace for them. And then it's interesting to me that then in their joy, Jesus calls them back to peace. Jesus obviously has something to say. He wants them to calm down, you know. But I think it's more than that. It's like something about like Jesus's desire for them is not this kind of like, obviously not fear and worry and sadness, but it's also not this like opposite extreme of like joy, rejoicing, exuberance all the time. Like Jesus knows that for them to do the things he wants them to do, to carry on his ministry, they can't just be super high all the time. And they can't get super low. They need to be like very grounded, you know. It's interesting because then it seems like the gospel writer is saying like peace is the opposite of both fear and rejoicing. Like peace is somewhere in between these extremes of terror and joy. Our work in the world, Jesus's desire for us, the desire for the way that Jesus hopes for us to go about doing ministry in the world, of bringing about the kingdom of heaven, is not to be like just constantly seeking out these super high highs or to getting like wallowing and stuck in the lows, but to find a place of groundedness. I don't think there's probably a lot of Christian traditions that are like really emphasizing the sadness, which is fine. But I think there are a lot of traditions that like emphasize this like exuberant high energy, always joyful. If we're not joyful, something is wrong. Mm-hmm. Situation. And Jesus, I think, to that kind of tradition would say peace, you know, like, hey, let's get our feet down on the ground here, you know, lower your arms and let's like center ourselves, you know. It's a much more contemplative Jesus. And I think Jesus knows that like the work that we need to do can't happen if we're just only seeking out this like really high energy, very emotional, rejoicing kind of life all the time. That like the connection that needs to happen between us and the people around us and the world around us, the work that we need to do has to be done with a really level head. Not disconnected from emotion, mm-hmm. but with the capacity to hold all the emotions while also being grounded and centered. I just love that. Peace be with you in terror and peace be with you in joy. And come back, you know, somewhere in the middle to do the work you need to do in the world.
Well, and I like it because it is that reminder that when we get in those places of enthusiasm, that we aren't doing work at that point. That's a celebratory place.
Yeah.
And it's great.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there is nothing wrong with celebrating. Mm-hmm. But the constant invitation from Jesus is to be a partner in ministry, to continue that work that he did. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, celebrate. Mm-hmm. And yes, sometimes you're going to be afraid. And here, come back to the work. Let the work ground you.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe I would reframe something that I said then, because it's not that peace is the opposite of fear or the opposite of rejoicing, but that peace is a thing that allows you to hold both of them and to not get stuck in one or the other. When we're living in a kind of peacefulness, when we're living in this kind of grounded, centered place, we are able to hold the high highs and the low lows and, you know, keep moving forward. And like you're saying, it's not that we don't celebrate. It's also that we don't grieve. But it's that when we do both of those things, we keep our feet on the ground. You know, we keep moving. We have a sense of the larger picture and balance the two. All right. Well, those are 2 points.
2 points.
That we had. Point number one was Charlotte's thinking about Thomas, about his longing to see Jesus in this moment, a compassionate way to think about the person we sometimes call doubting Thomas. Probably call him that too much. He's grieving Thomas. You know, he's longing for something. And he's courageous, you know, simply for not being there at the beginning, it seems like. So number two was mine, thinking about Jesus's twofold peace be with you. You know, peace be with you in terror and peace be with you in rejoicing, calling us back to kind of a grounded centeredness in our work in the world. So having heard those 2 points, we'd love to know what your point would have been if you'd been on the podcast this week with us. We would also love to hear any of your questions or comments or stories from your week of faith discussion and reflection. You can get in contact with us in all those ways listed in the description for this episode. We'll be back next week to talk about the third Sunday in Easter, which is Easter 3, which is kind of 2 Sundays after Easter Sunday. It's kind of confusing. It's okay. We only have 50 days of it. So it's
of being confused.
Yeah. That'll be for Sunday, April 14th. And until then, we say goodbye.
Goodbye,
everybody.